présenter rapidement Anne-Mour, qui est donc physiothérapeute. Donc son CV est aussi impressionnant. Elle est directrice de recherche dans un département en fait, qui s'intéresse aux professions de santé à l'université de Brighton en Angleterre. Elle est notamment aussi la rédactrice en chef du journal Manual Therapy et elle est elle aussi l'auteur de nombreux articles scientifiques et de nombreux ouvrages. Donc je vais lui laisser la parole pour donc son exposé qui traite aussi de l'evidence-based practice.
That's the extent of my French. Now, I can speak a little more, but I apologise for not speaking French to you today. And I thank the interpreter for taking up the challenge. So, I'd like to thank very much Pierre for organising this event and for inviting me to speak. I'd also like to thank him very much for his hospitality. I know he drove across Paris probably about 9 times yesterday, picking all the keynote speakers up. And he's done an absolutely wonderful job. And it is so marvellous to see so many kinds of therapeutics sitting in this room today. So it's wonderful. So I'm really pleased to be here. I'd like to offer you a warm welcome from my university, which is the University of Brighton. And we're based in East Sussex. This is the pier in Eastbourne, where my campus of the university is based. And you can see that we overlook La Manche, or the English Channel, as we would call it. And I often sit in my office and wonder, I wonder what's happening in France, in kindness therapeutic. So, I'm hoping that by the end of today I might have a better view. I had a 3-hour meeting with Pierre, which was very illuminating, and I enjoyed it very much, and I hope it's the beginning of some more collaborative work between the UK and France. So, why am I here? Well, Rob has given a number of hours of presentations over the last 2 days to a few of you about evidence-based practice. And there are a large number of physiotherapists all over the world who have anxieties about research, about the evidence-based practice, about how to get evidence into practice, and about all these topic areas that I've listed here. So if you're feeling a little bit anxious and worried about it, don't worry, you're not alone. And what I'm going to do is to try to show you a method, an example, of how one can support research in a national context. The other reason I'm here, of course, is how could I not accept an invitation to come and speak in Paris? You can't miss Paris. It's such a wonderful city. I'm just so disappointed that it's raining, but I have to tell you it is raining in the UK as well, so I'm not that surprised. And of course, other people might see Paris from a different perspective. But lots of people would also see research and evidence-based practice from a different perspective than perhaps Rob. I actually see research and evidence-based practice from a different perspective than Rob, although I agree that randomised controlled trials are actually very beneficial. But I'm not here to talk about that today, although I could talk about it very passionately. Perhaps another day. Next year, perhaps. I'm here to talk about the National Physiotherapy Research Network, which is based in the United Kingdom. And I want to give you a little bit of context about the physiotherapist's development of skills in research, and basically our readiness for research and evidence-based practice in the United Kingdom. Where we come from, physiotherapy began in 1868, a long time ago, when the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy was founded. There was, of course, no research to underpin any of the techniques, because we inherited them from the medical profession and other professions. And, of course, those techniques were prescribed for us by members of the medical profession. It wasn't until 1976 that our first degree course was established at the University of Ulster. And in 1977, physiotherapists were given the rights to actually treat patients off the street without a referral. and that was a big step for physiotherapy in the United Kingdom. By 1992, we had become an all-graduate profession, so every physiotherapist who was qualified with a degree. In the 1980s, we saw a proliferation of master's degree programmes being opened up to physiotherapists, but they weren't physiotherapy specific. And there were a small number of physiotherapists registered for PhDs and completed them in that time. By the 1990s, a lot of very specific master's degrees for physiotherapists had been developed. And by 1996, physiotherapists had completed their PhD, and I know this because I was the sixth. And it wasn't easy to register at that time. I was told physiotherapists don't do PhDs. So it took a long time to register. In 2000, we saw a great proliferation of professional doctoral programs. And in 2004, we developed the first professional doctoral program in physiotherapy in the United Kingdom at my university, which we're very proud of, and I think some of you might actually find quite interesting. So where are we now in terms of research maturity? Well, we have an all-graduate entry, so all our physiotherapists currently should have research backgrounds and some research skills. We also have a number of physiotherapists who qualify through accelerated master's degrees. So they come into those master's degrees with perhaps a degree in sports science or a degree in psychology and finish up with a master's degree in physiotherapy. We've got vast numbers of master's degrees. PhDs are on the increase. We have about 400 to 500 physiotherapists with PhDs in the UK now. And there's much more funding available for research, although there's not as much as we like, but there's never enough money, is there? And probably you, like the rest of the world, are noticing the credit crunch. But for us, the euro is just £1 now, so, you know, anybody buy me dinner later, would you please? We have about 486 experienced researchers registered in the UK. So that's where we are. We've also got a number of established research centres in the UK. And we host a number of national and international conferences. And we're very pleased if we get some people from France to those particular conferences. So we look forward to seeing you there in the next few years. We have a very strong research ethics and governance system in the NHS, the National Health Service in the UK, and also in our universities. And we have set up the National Physiotherapy Research Network, which I'm going to talk to you about more. We've had pressure on us to do research in the UK since 1991. And the pressure then was by a statement released from our Department of Health, which said research should become an integral part of healthcare so that practitioners, managers and other staff find it natural to rely on the results of research in their day-to-day decision-making. And we still find today that physiotherapists don't do that. Some of them do, but there are still some that don't. Largely that's because we still have 30% of our physiotherapy population who are not graduates because they graduated before 1992. So they don't have the research skills unless they've developed them by going on to a master's degree. So, at the moment, in our department of health system, we're very much facing a commissioning-led National Health Service, which means that commissioners are really not that interested in professions. So largely, they don't care if you're a physiotherapist, or you're an occupational therapist, or you're a nurse, but they are interested in your skills. So one of our big challenges is actually making sure that we have evidence to support the skills that we are developing and the skills that we are demonstrating to our undergraduates. And we have to be prepared to sell our profession in terms of the transferable skills that we offer. There is a very high increase on the emphasis on patient expectations and patient experience. And that's one of the issues for me around randomised controlled trials. and I can go into that later if anybody wants me to. There's a lot of expectations about patients having choice and involvement in their own healthcare, so self-management is very relevant. And there are a lot more diverse providers. So we have sports scientists, exercise therapists, some nurses, chiropractors, osteopaths, who are all in the same market that we are. So we have to find evidence to support what we do. And so that is why the National Physiotherapy Network was set up, to try and expand our research base and to develop evidence-based practice in a concrete way. So the National Physiotherapy Research Network really is about nurturing research, nurturing evidence-based practice, and also the researchers. Our Chief Health Professions Officer, who is the contact for physiotherapists with the Departments of Health and the government, has developed this wish list that multi-professional approaches to patient care are preferred. Cost-effectiveness or the economic case has to be built into research. And the research needs to address national and local priorities. So we're busy trying to see how we can do that via the network. Also, productivity issues have to be taken on board, because we have to have a population of therapists who are working to their optimum level. And we have a new initiative, which is the 18-week wait, which says that no patient should wait longer than 18 weeks for any form of treatment. And we also need to explore different models of care. But we have challenges, and I'm sure you have challenges, and you may recognise some of these. We have varying levels of expertise in research. The availability of research training is there, but not everybody can access it because they can't necessarily get time away from work, or they perhaps can't afford to pay the costs of that training. Some people, some therapists, have an ambivalent attitude towards research. You know, why should we be bothered with research? We know it works. Rob said that early in his presentation. Readiness to do research, I think we're nearly there, but we're not all there. And there's also the issue of the fact that a lot of researchers, when they first graduate, need a little bit of mentorship. They need a kind of an incubator effect to help nurture them along. And we've developed, or are developing, appropriate research ethics and screening in large proportion centres. Research activity involves a wide range of activities. So it's not about just doing research and collecting data, analysing data. Writing up and publishing it is also important. And we find that a lot of our graduates don't publish the results of their work. A lot of our master's students don't publish the results of their work. And I think that's because they lack confidence to do so. So again, the National Physiotherapy Research Network is about trying to increase that confidence. But research also involves people understanding research. So increasingly, we are trying to disseminate our work research, not just in academic journals, but in newsletters of charities, local charities, so that we can actually disseminate the work for the user perspective. So we usually have a plan for dissemination which involves about three stages. And applying research to practice, of course, is one of our key goals. So what about the National Physiotherapy Research Network? Well, in 2004, our Charter Society issued a call for an individual to act as a research champion for the profession. And there were a number of people around the country who thought this was a bad idea. We didn't really want one person saying, this is the sort of research that we should be doing. This is where we should be going. And so we developed a university consortium of professors who responded to this call with an alternative suggestion for a network. And in 2005, the network idea was approved, and we we were funded for 5 years to do this, and we launched the NPRN in June 2005. Now, what we wanted to do was to embrace a number of experienced researchers from across the country, and we put out a call for volunteers from experienced researchers to actually run local networks, local support hubs, as we call them. And I thought at the time we'd be lucky if we got 5 or 6 people to say they would do this, because we were not offering any money, so it was free. And in fact, we had 11 people who were very experienced researchers, postdoctoral level, had done a lot of research postdoctorally, and they agreed that they would form hubs in different parts of the country. And over the next couple of years, we had more and more volunteers, so in fact we've ended up now with 20 hubs across the United Kingdom. And this is where they are. And in fact, if you look at the top, if you look at Scotland and you look at number one, okay, number one also embraces those islands to the north of Scotland, which are the Orkneys. And so people fly in and out to meetings in what is Aberdeen in number one. Okay? So these are where the hubs are. And we were delighted with that response. Most of those hubs now have held launch activities. And what they do is they invite local clinicians. They don't all have to be physiotherapists. They can be any type of allied health professional. They invite students to these events, and all the hubs work differently. But basically, it's about raising the profile of research and evidence-based practice with those groups of people. We also have representatives from our clinical occupational interest groups, from managers, from physiotherapy consultants, which I don't think you have in France, but they're very high-level physiotherapists who actually work in clinics alongside medical consultants. But they are also part of this network. And together, this group is in a very good position to actually support and encourage research at what we would call grassroots level, with individual clinicians in practice. We have a core executive group, which I'm fortunate to chair, and I really enjoy this occupation. And we have a number of professionals from other areas, like Professor Jackie Campbell, who is a pharmacist actually by background. She actually works with podiatrists. And we have representatives from the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy. We have other professors on the executive committee from King's College London, from Keele University, and from Southampton. And we also have a member from the Occupational Therapist Society. We have a research support officer who is the only funded member of this group. So much of our funding, which isn't great, actually goes on the research support officer, who we think is key in keeping it all together. Unfortunately, she left us recently, so we've got a vacancy. So if anybody wants another job, that is all rush. So basically, we offer training and development through the National Physiotherapy Research Network. We, for example, run workshops on developing research cultures, journal and newsletter editing workshops. We run workshops on research funding, and we have plans to run other workshops up and down the UK as a sort of roadshow exercise in the different hubs. And we meet as a group, that's the hub leaders and the core executive. Altogether, that would be about 40 of us. We meet about 4 times a year. We've also developed a new handbook, which is a pocket guide to research, which will be published probably by March this year. And it has useful research, useful resources in it, useful information, to actually help people come to grips, if you like, with research in clinical practice. So our ethos is really that we should support everybody who is interested in physiotherapy-related research and that might not just be physiotherapists. It could be sports scientists, it could be biomechanists, it could be pharmacists actually. And the idea is that all these groups would come together and actually talk about research in a cohesive way. But we have to understand that participation in research at any level is just as important as getting papers published. Raining harder, isn't it? Our research officer role is an interesting one. It's a full-time role, but her job really has been to coordinate and update and promote the NPRN's research hubs with all sorts of information that comes in from different sources, and also to liaise regularly with the core executive. And they are based with me at the University of Brighton, which is a fairly multi-professional and multidisciplinary environment. How does it work? Well, the 20 hubs are facilitated by one or more university-based senior researcher. They each have a different set of skills, and each of them has a different mechanism for running their hub. They don't all run in the same way. We've been very careful about being non-prescriptive. And the role of these hubs is to bring clinicians together with a range of other professionals, make use of the existing research support systems that are in place, and also to provide advice, mentorship, and training to inquirers, and also raise the profile of evidence and research in practice. So this is how it works. An inquirer would ring up, or perhaps visit the hub facilitator. They would offer advice, but they would probably refer them on to other places for more advice, perhaps for some training, or perhaps to network them with other relevant researchers. And the hub facilitators do all this for free. So I have to emphasise that. There is a lot of this that is done on a volunteer basis. So what does all this mean? Well, it really means that the majority of us have skills in research in the UK. We've got funding available. We've got a growing effective research support structure. And we have a growing critical mass of researchers. So what's our problem? Why do we still need to be doing this? Well, it was interesting, the questions that were asked of Rob Herbert and his response to the question about what about the techniques or the skills that you are already teaching? What about the evidence to support those? And the answer is, there is some, but there isn't a lot. And actually, if you got rid of everything in your curriculum that wasn't evidence-based, there wouldn't be a lot to teach at the moment. And so we're in this situation where we are running to catch the bus. And I would agree with Rob that we can't have new skills being developed without suitable research to underpin them. The debate that I would have with Rob, which would be quite interesting, but unfortunately he's on a plane, or nearly there, would be what kind of research you should do to underpin those skills before they go for randomised controlled trial testing. But that's a debate for another time. Our stakeholders are many. Patients, carers, the government, and in the United Kingdom, I don't know if you know, but we are now four countries. So we don't talk about the United Kingdom very much, but it's easier than saying Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Wales, and England. We have a different Department of Health system in each of those four countries. They're very similar, but there are differences. So they're our stakeholders too. Clinicians, managers, academics, researchers, members of other health professions, the public generally, the professional body, local national health trusts, and strategic health authorities. And these are bodies that look after the interests of a number of different hospital trusts. And they all want evidence, they want more evidence, and they want it now, or they want it yesterday. So there's a lot of pressure. So, from the French perspective, I throw some questions to you, perhaps for consideration not today necessarily, but over the next year or so. Where do you think you are as a profession in terms of research skills and development? Who are your stakeholders? Who really counts? Is it important to increase your evidence base? And if so, why is it important to you as professionals? How can you capitalise on the expertise that you have in France in terms of research, research methods and evidence-based practice? Would a National Physiotherapy Research Network, or we probably call it a National Kinesis Therapy Research Network, France, be sensible? Would it be attractive? Would it be helpful for you to have greater links with the UK? And if you like, you could stop calling it the English Channel when we speak and just call it La Manche. If you are interested in that sort of collaboration, then we would be very happy to advise and help you. And in fact, I've invited Pierre to come to our next NPRN meeting in London, which I think would be very helpful for us, but also perhaps for Pierre. And I'm just showing you a picture of Eastbourne Seafront, which of course is just over the other side of La Manche. Not very far, it's only 26 miles. Okay? You could swim it. Come and see us, but don't all come at once. My office isn't quite big enough. So in conclusion, I'd just like to say thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak. Merci beaucoup.
Very strong when they went for grants.
So it has been beneficial, but not for financial reasons. And we've now, we've revisited our strategic plan about a year ago, so we have a new strategic plan now for the next 5 years, because we've actually moved on more quickly than we thought we would originally. So thank you for your question.
Bonjour, Michael Nuisan. D'abord, merci pour cet exposé. Ma question rejoint un peu la question précédente, mais pas à propos du comment, mais à propos du pourquoi. C'est-à-dire, quelle a été la motivation qui a réussi, le moteur qui a réussi à réunir au départ tellement de gens, tellement d'énergie pour un projet qui, ici en France, apparaît complètement exotique pour l'instant. Alors, je sais que c'est l'un des objectifs de Pierre. D'apporter ça en France, et puis je crois que tout le monde en est reconnaissant ici. Mais pour l'instant, en France, il s'agit de quelque chose de tout à fait métaphysique, presque martien. Alors, qu'est-ce qui a fait qu'au Royaume-Uni, est-ce qu'il s'agit d'un intérêt purement scientifique, ou bien est-ce qu'il y avait une petite touche économique et que vous étiez au pied de la falaise du Channel?
No, there was no economic incentive at all, really. The reason we did it was survival, I think. I think a lot of us have looked on the horizons and we see the nursing profession becoming much more powerful, with a large number of nurses in the UK who all take on roles that are actually overlap with what physiotherapists do. And we are increasingly being told in the UK that our evidence base is insufficient. And that's not just in the UK, that's worldwide. And so I think because of these criticisms, the fact that we knew that we actually had to demonstrate more evidence to support our practice, that was the big driver from the Chartered Society's point of view. And all the other researchers are at a mature stage now. I think if you'd asked them to do this about 10 years ago, you could have found that they wouldn't have been interested. They'd have been interested in just maintaining their presence within their own organisation. So I think what we have in physiotherapy in the UK is a lot more collegiality. But we are under pressure to produce this evidence. And as I said, that long list of stakeholders, people are asking us to do that. And we are very much more patient-focused than we've ever been. And so qualitative research is quite a big part of what a lot of those researchers that we talked about will be doing, as well as the usual randomised controlled trials and experimental work in laboratory situations. So I think it's about sharing. I think it actually gives people a lot more confidence when they know that there are people around them who are interested in research and are actually interested in collaborating together. So forming those hubs has actually strengthened the research abilities of those particular institutions, because they now have a large network of clinicians who can work with them to actually move research forward in clinical practice. So it wasn't the money.
On a une autre question ici.
J'ai écouté votre conférence avec intérêt, mais il me semble, si j'ai bien compris, que le système de pop-up dans nos pays plus francophones sont faits par des associations d'intérêts spécifiques. Donc quand je pense un peu comment c'est organisé chez nous en Belgique, on a par exemple une association qui s'intéresse particulièrement à la rééducation pelvienne, et qui fait justement exactement ce qui semble faire les hubs chez vous, c'est-à-dire qu'on a un endroit où on crée le lien entre la recherche et le travail du terrain. Est-ce que j'ai bien compris ou est-ce que j'ai manqué quelque chose?
I think you've understood my presentation. I mean, basically, we've got a large number of centres throughout the UK where there are experienced researchers who are doing their own level of research. They have their own research interests. So, for example, if you look at my institution, we do a lot of musculoskeletal research. We also do a lot of pedagogic research. And we're also very interested in health and ageing. So those are our three main themes. But that's not necessarily what local clinicians are interested in. Some of them are, but we found that actually we've got a lot of clinicians who are interested in cardiopulmonary research. And we have one expert in that area, but she's not actually a researcher. So they have actually formed what we call a hublet, a small hub. And so gradually we're building a number of different interest groups. And some of them are around our particular areas of expertise, but some of them are also sort of built on the expertise of clinicians locally. And that is actually giving a good fuel for interchange between academics and clinicians. So, I mean, you may be doing a very similar thing. I mean, our intention is to influence grassroots clinicians and to increase the use of open space and also get them participating in research. So it's not necessary to try and develop research centres elsewhere. Does that answer your question? Thank you for your question. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so it's a slightly different model. Yeah, so that's great.
La salle SWOT, si j'ai bien compris, il y a un groupe de soutien à la recherche. Ça pourrait être le démarrage de quelque chose qui ressemblerait peut-être au réseau anglais, de mettre déjà des fondations. C'est tous les bienvenus dans ce groupe de soutien. S'il n'y a pas d'autres questions, on va remercier le docteur Bourg pour son intervention.
Scientific Committee for the World Congress of Physical Therapy to be held in 2011. And I don't know, but I think some of you may have had a tulip in your packs. You have had a little tulip or a little badge. Right. And I'm wearing one of these badges now. We just thought we'd play a little film to advertise WCPT, hoping that you'll all be there in Amsterdam. It's not far, Amsterdam. Not as pretty necessarily as Paris, but don't tell them I told you.